picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I'd like to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Bob Chapman, who's been at this analysis of what's going on in the world longer than I have, about the only person I know who's around who has been. And Bob, of course, publishes the International Forecaster, and he's been telling us for a long time that we were going to see exactly what we are seeing today as we begin to see the collapse of the American dollar, the rising price of gold and silver. Well, it doesn't really mean that they're going up. It really means right now that the dollar is falling, and when we hear that the Canadian dollar is rising, no, Canadian dollar isn't rising. The American dollar is falling. And, of course, we're seeing basically the move towards impoverishing the American people, not happening by accident, but part of a long-range plan. Bob Chapman, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, I'm here again.
All right, fine. Well, let's get your analysis. I know people out across America who are regular listeners are looking forward to your analysis of what's going on, and you can say I told you so if you want to.
No, it's better to say that we were first in the battle and first to recognize that the battle, in order to be won, had to take a certain course. And hopefully many more will join us on that course. People don't like change, and they don't like to recognize that the precepts and the information that they followed haven't been truthful. And there's always time to change, and that time is now.
Well, of course, I think I think that we're seeing the implosion of our financial resources. We're finding the Arab countries buying up Great Britain. They're buying, of course, the NASDAQ stock exchange. They're buying the London Stock Exchange. They're buying a large segment of Carlisle. I mean, suddenly we find that the Arabs have all sorts of money, and, of course, they're simply going around and buying up large parts of Great Britain today.
Well, they've been doing that for many years.
Right.
And they will continue to do that because they are in power, because the British and the Americans have allowed them to stay in power. You may call them satellites or satrapies or representatives of the power of the Anglo-American combine and the Illuminati. You don't get an opportunity to purchase a large piece of the London Stock Exchange or of one of the insider private corporations such as Carlisle unless you are part of the group. And so that's what happens. You have to be part of the group.
It sounds like
that's the only way that you can do that. So you know where they're coming from.
And it looks like they're going to get about 20% of Carlisle, which, of course, is closely tied in with the Bushes. So, you know, it all sort of fits together once you have a program and you know who the players are. And, of course, this is going to really be all done at the expense of the prosperity of the American people as we move from being a first-world nation, increasingly towards a second-world nation, and the average American can't understand what's happening. They call it treason. They call it betrayal. We'll be back in just a moment with Bob Chapman as we explore what is really taking place financially behind the scenes and how it's going to affect most Americans. Well, Bob, why don't you just pick up the story and get your impression of what's taking place out there.
Well, as far as the Middle East is concerned, the great producers of oil, the price of oil is now past $80, and that money that they're gleaning from the sale of oil is the money that they are making these kinds of purchases with. Those prices are making life difficult not only for Americans, but people all over the world, particularly the poor nations, with the exception of those that do produce oil. And we've had a tremendous increase in the price of food, which is even more devastating on the third world. People are starting to starve to death. There's riots in many countries. And that will probably continue, and many people will die, but these people consider them useless eaters, and so they want rid of them anyway.
No, I think I said that. Almost half the world lives on less than $2 a day at the present time, and we can thank, of course, the the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and the economic hitmen have been doing everything they could, of course, to keep the third world countries enslaved and impoverished so that we could, of course, utilize their natural resources. And we're living well, and so many people, you know, are really so impoverished. And we keep saying, oh, we want to help. We want to help. We're going to give money. We're going to lend money. And whenever we do it, these people in the third world countries end up poorer than they were before we went to their help.
Well, that's because the people who run those countries are under the control of the U.S. and Great Britain and others, and they do exactly as they're told to do.
Right.
And they're all in a position where they skim off most of the money that comes in aid, and the people get very little, and that's why they're in the state of poverty that they're at. I mean, look at just tolerating the governments in Zimbabwe and South Africa. I mean, run by Marxists. It just shows you that they're in power because they are Marxists. And that's part of their plan, to use all kinds of groups against one another. And, you know, I don't see any of the mainline media talking about what kind of government we have. And it's very obvious that in the last 6 years in particular, we've had the evolution of the Patriot Act and other things that
Hold that thought for just a moment.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob is simply talking about how America is changing, how with the advent of these new laws in America, the Patriot Act, the Office of Homeland Security Act, ever more power to the federal government. We're moving away from a free society towards an authoritarian society here in America. So you pick the story up, Bob.
And this process is deprived us of our freedom. They want to take our sovereignty. They want to be able to track us wherever we go. And ultimately, they want to control our lives in totality. And this is what is called corporatist fascism. And that's what we have in America as government today. And both parties are complicit. And the House, the Senate, and the executive branch are all working toward the same goal, which is the enslavement of the American people.
But, of course, it's always done in the name of fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden, who's hiding over there in the cave, wants to take away our freedom. So that's why we've got to let the government, federal government, take away our freedom. So that Osama bin Laden
doesn't...
That's
true, and that is their story. And they continue to perpetuate this myth bogeyman of bin Laden and the ability of this creature to cause havoc all over the world. Of course, there's very little havoc happening all over the world. It's not instigated and perpetuated by the people in Washington, D.C., and in this case, Israel and the Middle East. And so I see them continue to do what they do because it doesn't matter what the American people believe or want to do anymore. And that, on a political basis, means that in the next election we either wipe 90% of the people out of Congress and replace them and get a new president named Ron Paul, or we're going to have a very, very difficult time if we don't do that.
Well, I'm really convinced that we are going to have a very, very difficult time, and I really believe that there's going to be terrible implications and terrible consequences to this country, certainly from a spiritual point of view, from a financial point of view, from an economic point of view. So let's talk a little bit about what's happening, you know, as far as the economy is concerned, because that's where you have so much to offer. Certainly the price of gold and silver seems to have just finally broken loose and began moving up as you've been anticipating for a long time. Certainly the price of gold was to $740 in Dubai, which usually sort of predicts what's going to be happening here in the United States. Where did gold close today?
I have the outside month here. The spot was off about 70 cents, and it's up in the 725-30 area.
What about silver?
What's that?
What about silver?
Silver was very, very strong today. I've given all my numbers in, and everything is being typed, so
right,
I don't have anything in front of me, but silver was up, I think, 18 cents, and gold is off about 70 cents. But it's just a perpetuation of the movement forward of gold and silver, which I predicted for the last 6 years.
But, of course, they've been manipulating the price of it for a long period of time, and as you pointed out there, they've been leasing gold and selling it on the open market, gold that they really didn't even own, but they've been able to keep the price of gold and silver down because they are simply always a reflection of the stability of the economic system, and when they start moving up, why, people realize the economic system's in real trouble. What do you anticipate is going to happen next with the price of precious metals?
Well, I think they're going considerably higher, just to reflect inflation since 1980 when gold was $850. You would have to, with official figures, mind you, we'd be looking at over $2,000. Unofficially, probably $2,500. So that's the minimum, just to play catch up with inflation. And I think that's fair, and it's a fair target as well. Usually after that, which I call the end of the second phase, or three or four phases, depending upon what transpires, you'll get the madness that comes in the markets. People will discover gold and silver. They'll realize finally that they're in hyperinflation, which has already begun. And they will start to flow into gold and silver and discover it is them as investment opportunities. And they will take the price from, say, $2,500 perhaps to $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000. There's no telling what will happen, and it will become a bubble like everything else does in investment. And there's a lot of people who will get in the end that when gold settles back down again from wherever it's going and corrects 20 or 30% from its high, then the latecomers probably won't do as well, but the people who are in now and buy now will do extraordinarily well. They'll be able to offset their losses in their other assets, because what follows inflation, and particularly hyperinflation, is deflation, and that will come just as sure as inflation and hyperinflation will come. I mean, when you have the United States government for the last 4 years increasing money and credit at an average rate of 10% when 3.5% is normal, this month they've done away with M3, as most people know, because they did not want to allow the people to know what they were doing. And the International Forecaster and a couple of other publications publish an estimate thereof. And it's over 14%, which is 48% a year, if they continue in that vein. And they will, because they have to offset the deflation that's going to be taking place in the losses in the credit markets as well as in the real estate market. And that's a desperate attempt to continue to keep the economy, quote, above water. And that's, I think, what we got to look forward to. You spoke earlier about the Canadian dollar being strong. It's not really that way. It's the U.S. dollar that's weak against other major currencies. It happens to be the worst of a bad lot. The only currencies in the world today probably that are backed by gold are the euro, and we don't know what the percentage is because they won't tell us, and we know that they've been selling gold. So instead of being 15%, maybe it's 10. Or maybe it's less. I don't know. It's all very secret. And Russia's, not officially, but unofficially, has quite a bit of gold to back the currency if they need to, as does Switzerland. And, of course, if the euro was to not exist anymore, the European nations, as far as I know, do have a lot of gold, although some of the, a great deal of it has been leased forward. When they lease gold, they still hold it on their books as gold, which they still own, when, in fact, to the people who they leased it to went and sold it to use the proceeds to do something else. And when they get paid back in dollars. And they've gone for a system here, this fiat system, and because they wanted to go to a world currency. And their plans have been shattered. They've had a terrible debacle in the Middle East. It set them back 30 years by their own admission. And now they have the results of a financial debacle which they created that they couldn't stop. And that puts them back even further, maybe 50 or more years. And so we're not going to see world government anytime soon unless they do it at the end of a sword, so to speak. And I don't think the people of the world are going to put up with that. And if they force the issue, yes, a lot of people will die, but so won't they, because people will be here to tell the people who is doing what to whom and why, because they really don't understand. I mean, they're still in denial that such a system could exist. Well, it does. And that's okay. All you need is 5% of the population to understand to make changes. And those changes will come. But in the meantime, we know what to do. We be in gold and silver, related assets. We get out of debt. And we prepare for difficult times. And they are on their way.
Well, as you point out, that the inflation certainly is not here in the here in the United States, but many of the other countries of the world are massively increasing their currency. And, you know, some of the countries are increasing their currency, 20, 30, even 40% a year. That, of course, will lead to disastrous inflation down the road. And certainly none of these countries have, gold-backed currency. What it does is produce temporary prosperity in those countries, and in China and Russia and elsewhere. But one of these days, things are going to have to come back to sanity, and then they're going to have to just turn out more and more and more money to try to keep their economies going, and eventually you destroy the values of the currency. Is that what's going to happen?
Well, it's already in process. 18 of 20 major currencies, countries, if you may, have been increasing their money at the same rate, money and credit, at the same rate as the United States. And, of course, that rate is accelerating because the European Central Bank and the Bank of England, Bank of France, and the United States have been having to create more credit in order to bail out companies and governments that have gotten caught in this collateralized debt obligation trap, which is bonds that are backed by mortgages which aren't worth the paper that they're written on.
Hold that, we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Bob is simply talking about how really the collateralized debt obligations, so-called CDOs, have been actually...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tieri. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Austria, they had shillings, and the people were quite comfortable when they were retired, had a good pension, had their money in the bank. But when they had to convert their marks and shillings into euros, they lost half of the value of their currency. And, of course, that money was going to help the people in Bulgaria and the Romania and the other Eastern European countries. They were so impoverished, and suddenly now we're beginning to find the people in Germany and Austria, the elderly people impoverished, and there's nothing they can do. Half of everything they spent their whole life working for now has been lost. So go ahead, pick the story up there, Bob.
Well, I think that's going to happen all over the world. And, there's just not too much at this point that can be done. and it will get more difficult. And that's why I keep on and keep on and keep on talking about getting rid of debt, and particularly credit card and revolving debt and vehicle debt, because there's a good chance one of you are going to be out of work soon. And they're just killing us. I talked to a subscriber today from Tennessee who is working in Washington, D.C. for Computer Sciences Corporation, which does a tremendous amount of government contract work and has for the last 50 years. And he said that one of their biggest businesses now is outsourcing, and they work with parties in different countries, and they get government contracts in the United States, and they use the H-1B, and half their employees in Washington are from other countries. And it's a terrible scam. They're putting all kinds of people out of work, and that's so they can, quote, employ this essentially slave labor. And that increases their bottom line, and they make more and more money. And we have less and less jobs, and our people cannot afford to live, because before they were making $30 an hour, and now they make $12.
But don't you think, as this happens, Bob, the Americans are going to have less and less money to spend on buying things from other countries. In other words, we're going to have to just cut back dramatically on our purchases here. Certainly as the price of gasoline goes up, we'll have less money to spend. And all of this is really designed to lower the living standards of the average American. It's not happening by accident. I think it's happening as part of a long-range plan, but they can't tell the American people. We've got to blame it on, well, maybe Osama bin Laden or Alan Greenspan or something. Not that Alan doesn't deserve a full measure of credit, but he couldn't have done it without the help of the people who put him in power.
Well, the people who run the Fed are figureheads, and they do what they're told, and that's what they get paid for. And let's put it this way. You have a man in there now, Bernanke, who is a professor. He has nothing to do with the real world. You know what academic types are like. They teach, and then hopefully their students will go out and learn what it's really all about. And as far as Alan Greenspan's concerned, he was a total failure as an economic counselor, and he lost all of his clients, and he was virtually destitute when he was working and had been appointed to the Federal Reserve Board. And he evidently made a deal with, you might say it's the devil, so to speak, and he ended up as head chairman of the Federal Reserve. And so these are the kind of people that they choose. And so, yes, it was Greenspan's folly, and he will get blamed for it, but none of the decisions were his, and none of them will be Bernanke's or anybody else who gets put in that position. The point is that the decisions are being made, and because the Illuminati has no other choice but to, so to speak, go for it, they are going for it, and they don't have all the tools that they need to do what they want. And I think that they've decided that they're going to not only have martial law, but to suppress the people. And that's not really something that you want to do, because then you end up like we are in Iraq right now with insurgents, and you've got to fight them on the ground, and that's the problem.
Well, of course, that's why they have all the concentration camps in place. That's why, of course, they passed the law so they can use the U.S. military here in America against the American people, doing away with the Posse Comitatus Act as part of the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act. But nobody ever asked why all these things are happening now. What do they know that we don't? Well, our guest is Bob Chapman. Bob, go ahead and pick up the story. Certainly, I anticipate we're going to have a tremendous amount of inflation. You've already said that you're anticipating 14 or 15% by the end of next year. That's devastating, isn't it?
Well, because we will have had a year of over 14%, which annualized is 48%, it's going to be devastating in the purchasing power. Prices are going to go out of sight. And of course, in a reflection of that, gold and silver will. And that's why it's so imperative that you have these, because you make money on them, but it's not going to mean anything. What is going to mean something is that whatever assets you have that are going to have losses occurred within them, that is going to be offset by the assets which you have in gold and silver. And only 5% of the population may be at the top, maybe 10% will be involved, and the rest of the people will be stuck. And it's not going to be nice, but that's the way it's going to be. No one knows how it's going to turn out. So all you can do is look at history, figure out what happened, figure out what to do, and hope for the best. Because if you don't prepare and you have no plan, then you're just going to get really stuck. And I think it's also good to have some dehydrated and freeze-dried foods put away for your family for a few months, things that you normally eat, and access to water, purifying equipment and things like that, especially if you have children. And it could come to that. And it could come to a lot of other things as well. You just never know what turn of events is going to happen, but you know it's not going to be good. And I know that you talk to your friends, and they think you're a little bit off. And you talk to your family, and they think you're strange. And sometimes it's hard for people to bear, but that's okay. You know, not everybody has the ability to understand. And most people don't like change, and they don't like to do things that they have no proof that they're going to need to do. And so, in the end, you're probably going to have to carry them. But that's okay.
Hold up, I will be right back in a moment with Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Bob Chapman, who is the editor of the International Forecaster. And before we go on, Bob, I'd like you to tell our listeners how they can get a copy of the International Forecaster and perhaps better understand what's really going on in the world.
The Forecaster is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. It's published by email on Wednesdays and Saturdays, runs around 25 or 30 pages each time, and we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month. If you'd like to get a free copy of either, you can go to the site, and that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, forecaster.com, or you can call toll-free to 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And we invite questions and problems and financial things from people. And if you'd like to do that, you can email us at international_forecaster@yahoo.com. international_forecaster@yahoo.com.
Well, Bob, how much do you think that the housing prices will fall in the areas where they've just been zooming up so high, so places like Miami and Phoenix and Las Vegas? I mean, what percentage can we anticipate that the price of the homes and condominiums is going to fall? Would it be 10%, 20%, 30% or 40%?
Well, we'll start with the worst end. California always goes up the most, come down the most. The more expensive homes in California could come down 60%. Most of them will come down about 40%, and that's 1989 and 92. So this is nothing new. And in other hot areas, relatively the same things will happen. It all depends in where you are. If you're in Miami or L.A. or Nevada, particularly Las Vegas, and Phoenix and New England, New York City and condos, or the Maryland countryside, you're going to see nominally 35% to 40% losses in some areas, perhaps more. I think, too, a lot will depend upon what the government does. They're talking about raising the limit on jumbo loans from $417,000 to $625,000, and were they to do that, it would relieve the upper end, for at least temporarily, of some of the pressure that's on it. There would still be people who would have to go into foreclosure. And at the lower end, they're talking about writing fixed-rate mortgages through Fannie and Freddie and the FHA that would be somewhere in the vicinity of perhaps 7%, and perhaps the half of the people who are going to go under wouldn't for the time being. But as we go along and the economy deteriorates, the same numbers are going to come up as would have come up anyway. Now, they can't buy their way out of this one. And so it'll just take longer for it to happen. In other words, it's not going to happen if they pass that kind of legislation for 2 to 2.5 years. It's going to take 4 or 5 years. And we don't know which way they're going to go on this, but I think that's what they intend to do. And who gets to pay for that? Well, of course you do. And then they'll raise your taxes after the next election, and they'll get raised very largely. And I think that anybody who has stocks would probably be thinking of being a seller before the next election, because I think long and short-term capital gains will go up quite a bit, and other income taxes. So,
but of course, if they raise the long-term capital gains, why of course you then discourage investment? You encourage people trying to make money. So that would have a tremendous dampening effect on the economy. One reason the economy has done as well as it has under the Bush administration is because they cut taxes and encourage investment.
That's right, and they increase debt phenomenally. We just had the short-term cash debt moved up to 8.95 trillion, but the real debt, the long-term debt, is somewhere in the vicinity of 70 to 100 trillion dollars, the commitments the government has.
But of course, they can get rid of that simply by through inflation. They can inflate that all away, so they really don't have to worry about paying it. But in the process, they destroy the value of everybody's savings,
and they destroy the economy.
Right.
And they know what that, and they have think tanks going 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in all the countries. They're all foundations of one form or another, and they know what the answer to this is. And but you got to remember, they created this thing in order to put people in a position where they would be forced to have a recession depression. And they couldn't stop the whole thing, because once they passed the point of no return in 2000, 2001, there was no way back. I mean, they had to go through with the program. And the only way they can delay it is by creating more money and credit and doing things like they intend to do with real estate, and that is increase the amount of money that's available to people who never should have had homes in the first place.
No doubt.
And all those speculators. Probably one-third of the homes that were purchased by speculators. And we're going to bail them out, too. I mean, the whole thing is ludicrous. And, you know, how much are we talking about? Trillions. And so it's going to be a very, very dastardly mess.
Well, if you're out there in the audience, you have a question.
So get ready for it.
If you're out there in the listening audience to have a question for Bob Chapman, you can give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And so, having read Bob regularly, he is anticipating ever-rising levels of inflation. And what inflation does is simply destroy the value of the currency. And, of course, my thesis, and I'd like to get Bob's idea on this, but my belief is that they are intentionally going to destroy the value of our currency. And then they'll take us into some sort of a global currency, because their real goal is a one-world government. And you can't have a one-world government unless you have a one-world currency. Now, there may be a North American Union somewhere along the line before we get to that one-world government, but that's the ultimate goal. And without the one-world currency, what were your thoughts on that, Bob?
Well, I think you're right about them attempting that, and it is down the road. I know that the Canadian dollar is one-to-one with the U.S. dollar, and that is significant. But they can't pull it off right now. And that's because of the Internet, people are aware of exactly what they're doing. And they're badgering government, telling, we know what you're doing, and you got to stop it. It's illegal. You're not supposed to do that. And you can't harmonize your regulations and try to sneak up on us with this thing, because we're not going to stand for it. So they're going to have a heck of a time implementing it. It's not that we, you know, Americans don't like Canadians or people in Mexico. They don't care one way or the other. They just want their own country and their own sovereignty. And I think that's fair. And a lot of Canadians and Mexicans come to America, and they make fine citizens. And some of them are criminals, just like there's plenty of criminals in America who are born here. And so it's an issue of sovereignty. It's an issue of constitutional freedom, and that's being taken away from us. And every instance that I have ever read of in history, when you do this sort of thing, or things like it, without having democracy or republic, you end up having to make changes in the government. And that in time will come. And it's going to be very difficult, because you're going to be working against your own government. But that's just the way it is. The people in Canada and Mexico, by and large, I'm sure, don't like being amalgamated into the United States. They have their own ways of life and their own culture and doing things, and they are different in what they think and what they do. And so they deserve to have what they want, and we as well. And, of course, you have to have rules about immigration. If you don't, then if you have good-paying jobs, people are going to come from everywhere because they want to live better. And you have to put a limit on it. And the most important thing of all, when it comes to commerce, is we definitely have to have trade tariffs, which would tax goods and services. And it's extraordinarily important, because if we don't do it and do it soon, we're not going to have many jobs left. On top of the fact that we'll have a recession, if not a depression, going eventually. And we'll have rampant inflation at the same time. It is not a pretty picture.
Well, I can remember back in 1979 or so, we were running an inflation rate to somewhere around, 16-17%. They had to get the interest rates up to 21-22% to dampen down the economy and simply make money unavailable for loaning. Do you anticipate that they will do that this time around?
Well, absolutely. I can say that officially inflation in 1980 was 13.5%. And the M3 was 14%, and that's where it's at now. And so we're already there where we were in 1980 at the top of that bubble as far as the creation of money and credit is concerned. We haven't caught up to the inflation yet in real terms. In 1980, they didn't make the figures bogusly. That didn't happen until the beginning of 1981, when Volcker took over, etc. And so, in this next year, between now and the end of 2008, what we're going to encounter is that move, unofficially, in inflation over 14%, and I say 15, and we're going to have the same kind of gold and silver prices, and that would be on gold over $2,000 an ounce, perhaps $2,500. And silver, it's hard to figure, but at that level, you'll probably see $100 an ounce. And so, you know, we didn't make this happen. We don't want to have to do the things that we're doing. We don't want to be subjected by government that's tyrannical. But that is what's happening, and it's not going to go away. And you're not going to be able to hide from it if you stay in the United States or Canada or Europe. There's going to be monstrous problems. And it's just something you have to come to terms with. And if you're unwilling to do so, that's okay, because you'll lose everything.
All right, well, let's go to George.
And you probably have a very, very extended belly because you're not eating regularly.
Well, let's go to George calling from Idaho. Hi, George. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi. Say, I got a question about these the gold and silver mining companies. Is that a temporary downturn they're going through? Can he talk to that a minute?
All right. He wants to know about the fact apparently some of the gold stocks are down. What do you think about that?
Well, there's three different categories. There's the middle and large-size producers, and they have performed okay, but they are not doing as well as they should be. Two factors. Your government has been shorting them and trying to manipulate them. And secondly, they were affected by selling by hedge funds, pension funds, and others that wanted to raise cash because they had large losses in the CDOs and the ABSs. At least for the time being, that has been broken, and they're not under severe pressure anymore as they were in the last month. And they still perform reasonably well. With the junior stocks, it has spread in sentiment into them. Not a lot of losses from where they were, but just not going anywhere. When you go to the exploration stocks, they probably didn't get as much buying as they would have otherwise because of what was going on in the other two types of those issues. And generally throughout credit, throughout the economies of the world. And so most of them are off a little bit, some of them up a little bit, but generally they're unchanged. It's sort of a stop of interest because people don't know what direction things are going to go in. Well, I know what direction things are going to go in, and they are going to be vehicles to be in because sooner or later, the public's going to discover that the stock market's coming down, bonds are going down because yields are going up, and that's already started again. And so those won't be as good investment vehicles as they would like. And so where do they go? The only place to go that's left, it certainly isn't real estate of any kind, is the gold, silver, and commodities. And commodities are something that most people don't understand. And gold and silver is pretty simple. You can go down and buy gold and silver coins or bullion, or you can buy shares. And we are going to have the biggest bull market in history in gold and silver in those related items.
All right, George, does that answer your question?
Yes, very good. I thank you, and I thank you, Bob, for all that you're doing and enlightening the people.
God bless. Thanks very much for calling. Thank Let's you. Go to Jane calling from Sacramento. Go ahead, Jane. Go right ahead.
I'm glad to catch your live show for the first time. I had a question about something that Mr. Chapman said about me, that you don't believe that it's possible for them to pull this stuff off yet. But I was going to ask you what you gentlemen know about this national information infrastructure. And I know my friend's been doing some research, too, and been hearing about that.
I'm sorry. Now, why doesn't anybody know about what's going on, are you saying?
This national information infrastructure that they plan on creating that supposedly may replace the Internet.
All right. Do you know anything at all about that, Bob?
Well, there is a new structure, and it's governmental in nature, just like the Internet was. And they are trying to, they're using it now. And yes, they may want to replace the Internet with that. And if they do that, they'll be able to totally control it.
So the last
and
thing
if they do that, we're stuck.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much, Jane. Let's go, of course, to Jack. Go ahead, Jack.
All right. If one is able to access Kennedy half dollars through local banks, would that be a good source of a barter medium? And then...
Oh, no, let's just take one question he wants to know. If Kennedy half dollars, if you get them from banks, would be a good barter medium.
Well, I got to be honest. I forget how much silver's in them.
No, I think you're... Jack, are you talking about pre-1964 50-cent pieces or the ones that are available today that are coming out today?
Oh, no, the ones... I called some banks and discovered that some of the more prominent banks told me that I could just come in and order a quantity.
In other words, just these are the ones that are minted now. They really have no intrinsic value.
Okay.
They're simply made out of pot metal of some sort. Does that be a fair statement, Bob?
Yes, and I think the Kennedys, what were they, 50%?
Well, they were, but the ones they're putting out now are simply just,
I don't know. No, but how much were the old ones? I can't remember.
Well, initially they were 90%, and then they had some that were about 90. 40%. They were 40%, after, I think it was 95 or 90, 40%, and then no silver at all after that.
I see. What was your second question?
Okay, second, you mentioned the mining stocks, and I was wondering if there were any... gold, uranium, mining stocks, like maybe Capella, that would be a good choice.
Well, Capella Resources, which is CPS.V, is in the process of exploring for uranium, and I think they have a very good chance of finding it. And there are a number of exploratory companies that could do very well. The problem is you have to have somebody guide you with them, and all too often there's not good guides out there. There's another one called Helix Resources, which is HEL.V, and that one, I think, will do very well in gold. And into the better companies, I like Agnico Eagle since it was $4 and around 50, and Silver Standard, we bought it at 85 cents, and it closed today at about $36 a share. And and in these investments, unless you have a very good reason, you should be holding
them. That's all right there. Well, this is Arthur Stan, and we have Jack from Michigan, and Bob, what were you saying, talking about the buying
stock? You should hold your investments in gold and silver-related assets. You shouldn't be trading them. And, I get letters from people, I want to sell this one at this price and buy it back at that price. Look, you're working against professionals, and very simply, you're no match for them.
Yes, normally we think of inflation as the loss or the destruction of wealth. I'm wondering if it's actually more like the theft of wealth. In other words, it's going from our pocket into someone else's.
All right. Mike wants to know.
Actually, when you have inflation, the buying power just goes up into thin air. It just gets extinguished.
And really, and it's a byproduct of increasing the amount of money in the circulation, isn't it?
Well, you know, I hear things contrary, but I can promise you inflation can only be caused by monetary events, and they are created by the Federal Reserve, and that's something that when Ron Paul becomes president, he has to get rid of.
All right, fine. Mike, I hope that answers your question. Okay. Inflation, it is not rising prices. It is increasing the amount of currency in circulation. Thank you very much, Bob. We'll look forward to being with you again here in October. Thanks so much for being with us.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, and of course, our guest has been Bob Chapman, and of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there in a position to help us, we'd love to hear from you. And then, of course, we want to remind you about our all-day seminar on the 28th of October. That's about 5 weeks from now, almost six weeks. Anyway, it's going to be on a Sunday, and we're holding it on Sunday because there's so many people who couldn't get on Saturday, and we've got a great lineup of speakers. We're going to start at, doors will open at 7:30. We'll start at 8. We'll go to about 5:30. We'll be serving lunch. If you're thinking of coming and you need a hotel, you're going to have to get that within the next week or so, or we lose the special rate we have for you. You'll have to just go out and get the regular hotel room, but we do have a block of rooms reserved at the Seacliff Inn for the time being. And then, of course, we hope that you'll come, you'll bring your friends. I think you'll have an opportunity to learn a great deal. We're moving into some of the most difficult and dangerous times of our nation's history. I believe we're moving rapidly towards a war with the Islamic world. And if you think that gasoline at $3 a gallon is high, wait till it gets to $6 or $7 or $8 a gallon. And we're talking about $150 a barrel for oil. And I really believe this is what's going to happen when we go to war with Iran and Syria. And everything points in that direction. I hope and pray I'm wrong, but everything points in that direction, and there's going to be significant disruption of what's going on here in America. So you need to have all the information you possibly can. This is why we hope many of you will be able to come to our October 28th meetings, and we'll have lots of times for questions and answers. And then, of course, we want to remind you, if you'd like to understand what's happening financially, we have a talk. It's called the Financial Tsunami. It's available on DVD, and of course it comes with a syllabus. We have a pamphlet on the history of money. If you have not yet read the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, we recommend this strongly, The Creature from Jekyll Island, and then the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, because the Federal Reserve is a conspiracy created by a small group of men who wanted to control the economics of our nation and enslave our people. And they've been around for many generations because they are part of the Brotherhood of Darkness. So the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, and lastly the book entitled of Fiat Money Inflation in France, and then of course to put it all together, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, book, the audio tape, the DVD will give you insight into what's going on. And then, of course, to really understand my talk, The Forbidden Secret. The Forbidden Secret, our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Because America truly is under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and of course, this next hour, the views of Brad Friedman. And Brad has been working for a long time, for many years, to educate the American people about the danger of election fraud. Not voter fraud, but election fraud. And of course, Brad makes a very definite distinction between voter fraud and election fraud, and the fact that when we have these electronic voting machines, it's very easy to rig our elections. And many people are serving in Washington, D.C., who've been elected through fraudulent elections. And until we have a proper and fair and honest electoral system, why, of course, nothing is going to change. And we will certainly have no input at all into our government. And, of course, Brad has a great deal of information about the corruption in the last several major elections. But the exciting things are we do have a Secretary of State here in the state of California who is really doing the right thing. And hopefully Deborah Bowen's policies, the Secretary of State of the state of California, are going to have a profound impact across the nation. So, since you hear me all the time, let's talk to somebody you don't hear all the time, but he has a very important message. Thank you for being with us, Brad.
Always my pleasure, Dr. Stan. How are you tonight?
I'm doing just fine. I'm just going to let you take off, and I'll just say a little something every now and then.
You know how you can just wind me up and let me go, right?
Amen to that.
Well, you're right, and I thank you for having me on. I thank you for mentioning Deborah Bowen. You know, she is, we've spoken about her a little bit before, but she really is a hero to the entire nation, and I suspect she's one of those folks, the Secretary of State, that people, you know, they really don't understand the importance of what she did. She ran last November. She defeated Bruce McPherson, her predecessor, and she ran on the promise of doing a top-to-bottom review of every voting system that was certified in the state of California. And, you know, California, what happens in California affects the rest of the country, as you said. Diebold, who was one of the biggest voting machine companies, I've seen them refer to California not as a state, but rather the world's largest voting market. So what happens here really will have a profound effect on the rest of the country. And indeed, when Deborah Bowen came in, she was true to her word. She began this test, independent landmark test of these voting machines, really for the first time. She commissioned the University of California to do this test, and people don't understand that, you know, the voting machine companies have been giving the impression, as have elections officials, have been giving the impression that these machines are tested at the federal level, at the state level, and on, but the fact of the matter is they're not tested at the state or federal level. There's very cursory examination. Most states don't do any testing at all before these machines are used to count our votes, the very heartbeat of democracy. So Bowen came in, did what she promised to do, put these things under the microscope with independent investigators for the first time, looked at the hardware and the software, and found that these machines can be violated within seconds, both their software and their physical security, and can have an entire election flipped without detection.
What's really so frightening about this is we go to the polls and we vote and we think we're going to get an honest election. And let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of the electronic voting machines is not to give an honest election, but to allow certain people to determine the outcome of that election before anybody casts their votes. We'll be back in just a moment with Brad Friedman. Well, Brad, pick the story up there.
Well, as Deborah Bowen, California Secretary of State, brought in her results just in last month, actually August, she found that every single voting system in the state of California that she tested could be immediately violated. Within seconds, could have an entire election flipped without detection. The testers there, the computer scientists who tested these systems, were able to gain complete control of the systems all the way down to the, for folks who know computers, all the way down to the firmware level, down to the tabulator level, and, you know, found all sorts of back doors and everything else that weren't supposed to be there, and, you know, that viruses could be easily inserted onto these machines. If you had inappropriate access to just one machine, you could then program it in such a way that, like a virus on your computer, it would pass itself from machine to machine and flip an entire election. I find this personally to be a grave threat to democracy. And I should mention, by the way, I find that to be a grave threat whether or not someone actually exploits that vulnerability. In other words, just the fact that they can, and we know they can, and they can do so without any sort of detection, is in itself a grave threat to democracy, because, you know, a lot of democracy is dependent on confidence. Someone once said that, you know, the mark of a successful election is when the loser, whoever he or she may be, and their supporters walk away feeling that the election was honest and that they lost fair and square. Well, we've seen, you know, now election after election where candidates have questions about it, where they're, you know, they challenge the results. We're still in the middle of what's been now a year-long challenge down in Florida. No surprise, down in Florida, U.S. House District 13 down there, they're still investigating what happened last November when 18,000 votes disappeared on these touchscreen machines down there. As recently as this week in Memphis, they began early voting for a mayoral race, and the mayor, who's one of three running in a very tight race for the post, came out with a statement that he wanted them to stop early voting because he's getting reports that the votes are flipping on these touchscreens. And we've seen this time and again with these machines. And as I say, even if, and I'm granting you sort of a best-case scenario here, even if the machines aren't rigged, even if an election is not flipped, these systems pose a grave threat to our democracy because we don't know what happened in Memphis, for example.
All right, hold that thought. Yeah. We'll be right back here in just a moment.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we're talking with Brad Friedman about our voting machines, and Brad's point is that certainly the voting machines can be rigged, and even if they are not rigged, why, the fact that they can be rigged certainly is a threat to our what he refers to as our democracy, because we have to believe that we're having fair and elections, and of course we really don't. In fact, many of our people may have heard of the story of this young man who attended a speech that John Kerry was given somewhere in the South, and of course when it came for time for questions and answers, he asked John Kerry, look, you know, you certainly in the elections, you had a lot of, when there was a serious question about what had happened in Ohio, why didn't you challenge that? You had the money to do it. You had the ability to do it. Why didn't you challenge the outcome of those elections, which many people believe were fraudulent? And of course, he ended up getting carted out of the room and tasered repeatedly. But he kept saying, don't taser me, I'll leave. And they tasered him anyway. And of course, but the question he asked, why didn't John Kerry challenge the election? Well, of course, those of us who understand the power structure realize that, as this young man said, you know, both the candidates in 2004 came from the same secret society at Yale, Skull and Bones, only a few a thousand members living today at this organization, probably about 800, I think, of them, and two of them were running for the presidency. And of course, the question that I think in many people's minds that this young man raised is, why didn't John Kerry challenge the elections in Ohio in the year 2004, when there was a great deal of evidence that those elections were rigged? And the question now has been raised in people's minds, Is the election system fraudulent? Is the current administration in Washington, D.C. a legitimate administration or the result of fraudulent voting? And many of us believe it was. Now, I'm not saying we'd be any better off with John Kerry there. I think he would have carried out the same policies. But at least the question has been raised in people's minds, and you pick up the story there, Brett.
Well, yeah, and I've said many times, by the way, whether it's John Kerry, George Bush, or anybody else, Americans get the government that they deserve. That, however, that's for good or bad, but that, however, only works if, in fact, they get the government that they actually chose. And given all of the questions now that we have about our electoral system, about electronic voting now in particular, which is a growing process and problem, we've always had problems with our elections. We've always had problems who wanted to steal elections in this country, who wanted to keep people from voting in order to win elections. Well, we still have that now, and we certainly had that in spades in 2004, but now we've got these infernal electronic machines everywhere where if the election is stolen, is slipped, is hacked, is rigged, we will never know, and there will never be a way to find out. And that's what it's a real threat to our democracy, to confidence in that system, as you mentioned, which is why you've got to go back to transparency. Transparency is not going to keep you from having a rigged election. It's not going to keep you safe, but it's going to give you a fighting chance. If we can see the ballots, if we can watch how they're counted. Back in, I think it was August of last year, a Zogby poll came out and said that 92% of Americans felt that they ought to be able to see how their vote is counted. And that is strictly impossible to do with these electronic machines. When you think about it, and I know a lot of folks who may be listening, they may be thinking, oh, well, paper ballots are, easily defrauded as well. Well, that's true. But, and we've heard the stories of, you'll find ballot boxes. You'll see them floating in the river after an election. Well, here's the good news. When you're dealing with a paper ballot, you can actually see the ballot box floating in the river if that's what happens. If your ballots end up in the river with an electronic machine, you'll never know it happened. You'll never see a thing. And that's sort of the problem that we're talking about. And we're seeing it now more and more as these machines have proliferated. You're seeing it in race after race, election after election. It doesn't get reported in the national media very much. Certainly, you can go to bradblog.com every day where we report about this, and it's often in the local news. So, for example, in the problem they've had this week in Memphis in that mayoral race, it's all over the local newspapers, but we don't hear about it nationally. So they'll have a problem in Tennessee, this week, and next week another election will be run in Missouri or wherever it is on the very same machines, and those voters will go to the polls and have no idea that these very same machines failed the week before. These are the extraordinary things that I've been uncovering at BradBlog, and why I've been working so hard. And frankly, with folks in Congress, both Republicans and Democrats, to try to bring some real reform to this system before 2008. Unfortunately, the Democrats currently have a bill, an election reform bill in Congress, and I should say that I worked on that bill with the Congressman Rush Holt before he introduced it in this session, but unfortunately, it still doesn't have the protections that we need, and in fact, it makes things worse. In a number of ways. Amongst them, it will essentially institutionalize the use of these touchscreen machines under the premise that, well, if you just add a paper trail to these touchscreen machines, somehow that will keep us safe. Report after report, scientific report after report, has shown us that people don't check those so-called paper trails. We know elections officials don't actually count those paper trails. And that even when they do check them, a recent study from Rice University showed that 2/3 of the people that look at them don't even recognize vote flips that happen right in front of their face. So you need a hand-marked paper ballot that we can count, we can go back and recount, and know for a fact that ballot reflects the voter intent. And that's something you'll never have with these touchscreen machines when they spit out these so-called paper trails that come out of the side of these machines.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what had happened back there in Ohio. And I forgot what county it was, but this was one of the larger counties in Ohio, which went strongly for Bush. And, of course, by rigging the elections in this one county, they were able to rig the election in the state. By rigging the election in the state, they changed the outcome of the election in 2006. Now, then, of course, apparently the Libertarians and the Greens said that was a rigged election. They put up the money, and they wanted a recount. Would you tell that story? Because, tragically, the major media has blocked this story out completely. Because, of course, it challenges the total legitimacy of what's going on in Washington, D.C. But what happened when they were going to do a recount in this key county in Ohio?
Yeah, well, actually, they had the Greens and Libertarians stepped up because John Kerry didn't. The Greens and Libertarians stepped up and demanded a recount statewide in the state of Ohio. And the way the recount law works in Ohio is that basically each county has to go in and recount 3% of the precincts by hand. And they compare it to the machine count numbers. And if they match up, and mind you, at the time, Ohio had a lot more paper ballots, so they actually were able to go in and count those paper ballots. Well, when they went in and counted those, the elections officials wanted to make damn sure that they did not have to count the entire county. So they pre-counted the precincts. Instead of randomly choosing which precincts they were going to choose, they knew which ones they were going to choose. There would be precincts where the counts would match up. And in fact, this was Cuyahoga County, Ohio. And it was found that, in fact, they gamed the recount. Two elections officials were found guilty. They were given the maximum sentence, which was only 18 months, which I find to be not nearly enough, frankly, especially what has become of that 2004 election. But they were given the maximum sentence. The judge said he believes the conspiracy, if you will, goes much higher. But so far, all they've been able to get is those two elections officials who were found guilty for rigging the 2004 presidential recount. And that was just in one of 88 counties across Ohio. Back in September of 2006, a federal judge, because there were still ongoing suits concerning the 2004 election, a federal judge ordered all 88 counties to maintain their ballots and their records from the 2004 election beyond the 22 months that they were already required to keep them by state law. He told them, you need to keep these things. Well, we just found out within just the past few weeks, the 56 out of 88 counties in Ohio lost or destroyed some or all of their ballots from the 2004 election.
So much for fairness in elections, right? Because, of course, if you can challenge what happened at that time, you challenge the legitimacy of the current administration and my fear that they are going to plunge us into a war with the Islamic world. But go right ahead. In other words, how can those election officials justify destroying the records, or the ballots, when they've been ordered not to? And is anybody going to go to prison for that?
Well, that's what I would like to know. I've been talking to the Secretary of State of Ohio, the new one, and who, by the way, replaced Ken Blackwell, who was terrible. I mean, he was the guy in 2004 that was the Secretary of State. He was also the co-chair of the Bush-Cheney campaign, and he gamed that system something terrible. Well, he's out of a job right now, thankfully. We've got someone else in there who I have some confidence in, Jennifer Bruner. She's no Deborah Bowen, but I believe she's in there to try to clean up the system, and she's got just a mess on her hands, not just going back to 04, but looking forward to 2008. In the snake pit that is Ohio, but she still has not called for accountability for these 56 counties. I'm hoping she will. I'm hoping she will ask the Attorney General of the state of Ohio to begin an investigation and to hold someone accountable for what happened.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, Dr. Stan here, I guess, is Brad Friedman. And go right ahead, Brad.
Well, we were talking about accountability for what happened in 2004. And though you've got a couple of elections officials now who were found guilty of rigging the 2004 presidential recount, there was still, you know, the matter of 56 out of 88 counties who felt they could defy a federal judge order to retain those 2004 ballots. So the, you know, the downside is we may never know what actually happened and who really won. I suspect I know who really won, but it would be nice to have all of the evidence out there. I'd like to see some accountability. And I'm hoping that Jennifer Brunner, the new Secretary of State of California, will call on the Attorney General out there, Mark Dan, to begin an investigation and hold somebody accountable. Otherwise, as I believe you've suggested, Dr. Stan, there is nothing in place to keep them from doing it again.
Well, let's take a look here in California, because really what's happened in California is really quite revealing. Mm-hmm. The custom is, you know, that since the election is coming up on a specific day, and it would be an awful job to have these voting machines, you know, delivered every morning to all those precincts in the community, so they let the people who are going to be working in the precinct take home of the voting machines. They call them sleepovers. But, of course, anybody who has access to one of those voting machines could get into it, could change it. And so Deborah Bowen, who is the Secretary of State in California, has outlawed sleepovers. So you pick up the story there, and let's discuss the implications of that. And, of course, what this is going to do to the process of voting here in the state of California, which I'm hoping, of course, will be beneficial. But you pick up the story.
Well, yeah, you're right. And it was actually last year that I broke the story of these sleepovers that are happening here in California and actually in many other states, Ohio, Florida. They send these voting machines home pre-programmed, election-ready, good to go. They send them home with poll workers because they claim they can't figure out how to get them to the polls on election morning. And indeed, you know, in some of the larger counties, there are thousands of polling places. Problem is, it takes about 60 seconds to hack one of these voting systems with a virus that can spread from machine to machine, flip an entire election without detection. And as Secretary of State Bowen's top-to-bottom review recently found, you can access these voting machines without breaking the seals that are so, you know, I mean, they put this impenetrable plastic tape onto these machines so that no one could possibly get in there and do anything. Well, obviously, you can. And obviously, when we're talking about an election where there are, millions, billions, trillions of dollars at stake, the incentive is quite high to get to one of those poll workers and mess around with those machines. It's too easy. And it's too dangerous, and though California has done this now for decades, frankly, they've sent these machines home, it didn't used to matter as much because you were dealing with paper ballots where they could be tracked, where you could see if there was any monkey business with them. It's not so with these invisible ballots on these invisible machines that we use. That's why it's so dangerous. So now you've got elections officials, excuse me, and I was just on the phone this evening with Gail Pellerin.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment.
Right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're talking to Brad Friedman. Brad Friedman, of course, is on the front lines of this battle to try to make sure we have fair elections and that these voting machines are not scammed. And what Brad has pointed out is that the custom has been for some time that anybody who wants to or any poll worker can take the voting machine home with them. Now, it takes about 30 to 40 seconds to game the machine, to change it, and infect it with a virus then can infect all of the other machines. So this would certainly be something you can't have people have access to have these machines in their home. They call them sleepovers. Well, this is the custom in California. Well, certainly Brad has been working, and I happen to live in Santa Cruz. Our the woman in charge of the voting here is a woman, a Democrat, but a very nice lady, named Gail Pellerin. And she, of course, has gone along with this whole idea of the sleepover, and it's always the way it's been done. And Brad is pointing out that the Secretary of State has said, you can't do that. It's no longer going to be acceptable to give the poll workers the opportunity to have sole access to these machines. All you need to do is get one poll worker to corrupt one machine, and you could throw the election for the whole state of California, or at least a large part of it. So pick up the story there, Brad.
Yeah, and thank you for mentioning that, because she, I spoke with Gail Pellerin last week, actually on the air, and I asked her about these sleepovers, and she said that she had planned to do them again in 2008, excuse me, despite the Secretary of State's new security requirements, which I thought pretty clearly made it impossible to do that. In other words, it says that, you know, two elections officials must be in possession of these machines at all times and so forth. And then I had the opportunity to speak with the Secretary just this week, and she, in fact, confirmed that these sleepovers would violate the security requirements. I brought that back to Gail Pellerin in Santa Cruz, your hometown there, Stan, and she said, well, thanks for that info. I guess we have to find a plan B. What do we do now? And you've got Ms. Pellerin and other registrars around the county who are trying to figure out, well, if we can't send them home with poll workers anymore, what are we going to do? And that's a very good question, because you know, when the issue originally came up, there was a registrar of voters up in Yolo County who said, well, you know, if we can't deliver these machines securely, if we can't deploy them securely, perhaps they ought not be used at all.
Oh, wouldn't that be a terrible tragedy?
Wouldn't that be awful?
Now, maybe we get back to something really, really complicated, like a paper ballot.
A piece of paper and
right.
A pen? It's too confusing for me, Dr. Stan. I don't understand how that would possibly work. But I should give credit. That was Freddie Oakley, the registrar clerk from Yolo County, one of the few registrars in California who's been quite outspoken on this, and to say, you know, we do need transparency in our elections. We do need the electorate to have confidence in these elections. And it's not enough to say, oh, these machines work. Just trust me. That's what one election official who I believe you may know up in Monterey County,
yeah.
Tony Anchundo, a 13-year elected official, he told me on the air, Brad, you know, to a certain extent, you have to have faith in your elections officials. In that case, that would be me, he told me. Well, a few months later, Monterey County Registrar Tony Anchundo was charged with 43 criminal counts, to which he eventually pled no contest. So, you know, the good election directors out there will tell you, don't trust me. You shouldn't have to trust me. Our system is not built, our entire country, our Constitution, is not built on trust. It's built on checks and balances, and you have to have that. And so I'm happy to work with Gail Pellerin in Santa Cruz, and I invite folks who are listening out there in Santa Cruz to get in touch with that office and to find out how you can help, how you can be a poll worker, how you can help make this system more transparent. I found that though Gail Pellerin and I disagreed on a few things, she seemed quite willing to listen and talk with people like myself who were concerned about the election system. So I want to give her credit for that, too, because a lot of these election officials don't want to even talk about it. And I can understand why, to a certain extent, because they've gone out on a limb, asked for millions of dollars from their counties for these machines, told them they were secure because the voting machine companies told them so and they believed them. And it's very difficult for them now to come out loud and say, I guess I was wrong. We need to get rid of those, you know, $20 million worth of machines and buy $20 million worth of new ones.
Either that or maybe just get some very, very cheap and inexpensive little paper ballots and use those. And then, of course, here in California, in Santa Cruz, they have some sort of machine that will read those things automatically. But at least you can check it and recheck it. And
yep.
You always have those paper ballots to go back and recount if there's any question that the machine has lied or the machine was rigged. So we'll be back in just a moment with Brad. If you have a question, give us a call. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Brad Friedman, and we're talking about election fraud. I was almost going to say voter fraud. Election fraud here, not only in California, but across the country, and the real potential for rigging our elections. So pick up the story, Brad.
Well, I should probably explain why, and I know why you say election fraud, and because I've chastised you for saying voter fraud, because there is, in fact, a campaign around the country by the Republicans, by the Department of Justice even, by some phony grassroots groups, to suggest that there is some massive epidemic of voter fraud, that's voters voting twice, or illegal aliens voting, or something, and dead people voting. And the fact is, it's just not so. And the only reason they're out there pushing this idea across the country, frankly, is so that they can impose these draconian photo ID laws at the polls, saying that no, it's not enough that you have a military ID card. You've got to have a government-issued photo ID that we give you, a driver's license, whatever it is. They're trying to keep people from voting. And they know that, by and large, the folks who don't have driver's license photo IDs are minorities, folks from the inner city, the elderly who don't drive anymore, and they tend to vote, by and large, Democratic. So that is a scheme, that is a scam being put forward by snake oil salesmen in the Republican Party in this case, and that's voter fraud. On the other hand, election fraud, where we're not talking about a single person, you know, voting twice, we're talking about a single person who can flip tens of thousands of votes with the stroke of a computer keyboard. That's the big danger here, I believe, that we face, and that's what I'm trying to get the word out any way I can.
Well, I think you're doing an excellent job on it, and just a moment or two, when we bring all of our stations back on board, we'll want to have you, of course, tell our listeners how they can get to your web page, your blog page, and get the information. But ladies and gentlemen, it is vitally important that those people who listen to our program begin to understand the enormity of what we're beginning to talk about, because this is undermining the very fabric of our system and of government, our way of life. And if they can rig the elections, then it really doesn't matter whether we vote or not, so they have no more freedom than the people in the Soviet Union. We'll be right back with Brad. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Brad Friedman. And Brad, I'd like you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get to your blog site, and what they'll find there, how they can certainly get on your list and get regular information.
Sure. Stop by a very easy bradblog.com. That's BRADBLOG, bradblog.com. Come on by every day, frequently by the hour, sometimes by the minute. We update it with the latest stories. I'm an investigative journalist, so I try to dig in and find out what is at the root of what's going on. And I try, much as I say about elections and elections officials, and I say don't trust them, I tell people don't trust me either. If I report something, I try to allow you to independently verify what I reported. It's not enough for me to talk about some study that says this or that. I'll put a link to that study so you can look at it, decide for yourself, and correct me if I'm wrong. You can, comment back in our comment section. So that's updated every day, and as I do only for you, Dr. Stan, and I mean it, only for you, I let your listeners in if they'd like to we send out usually a daily email with Brad Blog Alert with the most notable stories of the day via email, and summaries of those stories with links back to the full story. If folks want to write to me, brad@bradblog.com, put in big capital letters in the subject line, put add me to the list. I will add you to that private media list with the summary of the most notable news stories every day at Brad Blog.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate what you do, Brad, because certainly it's so important that we have somebody who's out there that we can trust keeping track of what's going on. We must maintain the integrity of our electoral process, and you're doing a great job.
It means a great deal for you to say that, Stan. It's an uphill battle, I'll be frank, every day. We're not sponsored by anybody. No corporations, no foundations. It's just me and some kind readers who donate every now and again, and if I can sell some ads, great. But it's clear that it's needed. You know, there was a report, and I mentioned this to you the other day. We didn't get to it on the air. But there was a report about 3 weeks ago on a cable news network where Dan Rather is now reporting. And so very few people saw it, frankly, because it's a very small cable channel called HDNet. But it was an absolutely startling story, and it was one of the first times really anyone in the mainstream media has bothered to dig into this election situation. And Rather found two remarkable things. One, he found out that the touchscreen machines, voting machines, made by the largest company in the country who makes these machines is ES&S. And it turns out they make their touchscreen machines down in Manila, the Philippines, in a sweatshop, and there is absolutely no testing going on. He had a couple of whistleblowers who spoke about what was going on in that factory and that there was no quality control whatsoever. They did a single test. And it was called the shake test. And yes, it's as bad as it sounds. After they would make the touchscreen machines, they would actually pick them up and shake them. And if they didn't hear any loose screws in there, that would be considered a passing grade. And these touchscreens would go on. That was the quality control at this factory. So, you know, you may ask yourself, who has their screws loose if we're using this kind of system for the very heartbeat of democracy, the vote. But that was one absolutely startling thing. And by the way, ES&S had never disclosed to the federal the commission, the Elections Assistance Commission, which is supposed to oversee this stuff. The companies are supposed to disclose where their machines are made. Well, I guess they just forgot to mention the sweatshop down there in the Philippines where these folks, without air conditioning, by the way, were paid anywhere from $2 to $2.15 a day. That was...
And I really think, of course, that if people go back to the year 2000, and the election that was held in 2000, and of course, it already hung on what happened in Florida. We heard about the hanging chads. We heard about the hanging chads in the morning. We heard about the hanging chads from the voter cards at noon, in the evening, and day after day after day after day. We heard about the voter the hanging chads, mm-hmm. And somehow, of course, this meant that we had to come up with another system where we could really get fair elections, where you wouldn't have hanging chads. And what did they do? They came up with these electronic voting machines, and I think it was a scam. I think it was a scam to bring in these electronic voting machines, not because they would be more efficient or doing away with voting with hanging chads, but because these can be rigged. And by having voting machines, you can rig. Why, of course, you can throw elections. And these elections will determine not only the course of our nation, but the course of what's going on in the world today. And one only has to look back and see how they condition the minds of the American people to believe, oh, we had this real crisis in our election process. We had to solve it so we could get pre-elections or honest elections, and look at the mess we got into.
Well, you've hit on the second part of the Dan Rather story, and I was wondering, as you were given that lead-in, did you happen to catch this?
No, I really didn't, but I'm glad. But tell us about it.
You nailed it. Boy, you nailed it. The second part of this report, which was more startling than the first, included seven whistleblowers on camera by name who worked at the Sequoia Company, which happens to be the largest manufacturer of voting machines in California, but they put their machines out all across the nation. Well, back in 1999 and 2000, the Sequoia Company had already moved to touchscreen voting. This was prior to the debacle in Florida. They had already moved to touchscreen. They were using them in Riverside County, California in 99 and 2000, but by and large, they were paper ballot printers around the country. And the Dan Rather report with the seven whistleblowers who worked at the company, who worked in the factory where they made the paper ballots that went to Florida on camera, they said that they were given bad paper to use for the ballots in Florida only for the 2000 election. They rejected that paper time and time again. They had previously been very proud of their product, and they said that they were proud of making a defect-free product. They kept sending the paper back. No, we don't want it. Someone kept sending this bad paper back to them, and someone, eventually they came in one day, and someone had signed off on it. To this day, we don't know who signed off on that paper. That was the paper that they used in Florida for the punch cards across the state, but it gets worse. They were told to misalign the chads. You were talking about those hanging chads. Misalign the chads going to Palm Beach County only. They had never done this before. They were told it was because of the humidity, that, the ballots, when they get to Palm Beach, somehow they'll swell, and now they'll be in alignment. Never mind the fact that they didn't have to misalign the chads in any other, you know, in Alabama, in Louisiana, in Texas, you know, other places with high humidity, only in Palm Beach County. And, in fact, in the report, Dan Rather was able to get some of those ballots from, some of those unpunched ballots from Palm Beach County 2000. And in fact, they compared them. They did a punch test. They made a machine that actually punches them out. And when they compared it to the normal Sequoia ballots that weren't misaligned, they found that all of the ballots in the Palm Beach County punch test were left hanging. In other words, Sequoia, and I don't know whose orders it was under, and I'm still looking into it, but the Sequoia Voting Machine Company purposely misaligned those chads, made bad paper ballots in the state of Florida, and I know for a fact that, they stood to make pennies for each of those paper ballots and a couple $100 for a punch card machine, but they stood to make millions if they could move to touchscreen voting, since they were one of the first folks to have touchscreen voting. Indeed, they did make millions, billions perhaps, and it was all because of those those bad punch cards that were used in the state of Florida. Now, it took 7 years to get that report out, Dr. Stan. Seven years.
And certainly, I'm proud of Dan Rather for following that through, and maybe we'll convince him that there really is some sort of an organized effort out there to mislead the American people.
Well, He seems to be in a fighting mood right now. He's suing Sumner Redstone and CBS for $70 million, saying they railroaded him out of there after his National Guard story, that no one to this day has proven those, either the documents or the content of what he was talking about in the George Bush National Guard story. No one has ever proven that information to be false. Yet he was run out of there because it was a political hot potato back in, 2004 back then. And so I think he's in a fighting mood now, and I hope so, because he did some rather extraordinary work in this report. Frankly, I think he deserves a Pulitzer for this investigation. You can go to bradblog.com, do a search for Dan Rather, and you can watch this this video report online. It is absolutely startling. And it tells us that either Sequoia knew that they were going to, that they wanted to cause problems for the punch cards so they could move to touchscreen ballots. But that doesn't explain why they chose Florida only. And I would like to know who was the one who gave the orders to game those paper punch cards in Florida. Because that wouldn't be about, corporate greed and trying to move to touchscreens. That would be about gaming an election. And, in fact, before the 2000 election, they knew that the state in question at the time was Florida. It's a remarkable report, and I guess I shouldn't be amazed by now, but it has been followed up by the mainstream media almost not at all.
Well, of course, that's one of the advantages of being not part of the mainstream media, paying to for our access to radio stations. Of course, I do appreciate the radio stations that do carry our programming, but the miracle of shortwave and the Internet and then those stations that carry our programs, at least some people across America are hearing the truth that they'll never get off of ABC, CBS, or NBC. So, and of course, I appreciate so much your being on top of that. So you come up with the information. I'll give you the voice.
Well, I really appreciate it because, you know, we've got to get the word out. And if it's station by station, blog by blog, we'll do it. We'll get it out there because, this is a remarkable story. You're going back 7 years. You're talking about overthrowing an entire presidential election purposely. Who done it? And, it's not like you've got rumors. You've got 7 whistleblowers from that company who are willing to put their name and their face on the record to say this is what happened. And they said, we knew. When that trouble started happening in Florida and everyone started, with the hanging chads and counting those ballots, we knew those were our ballots. And those were the paper ballots that we tried to not have to send to Florida. But someone ordered them to do it, and Sequoia, to this day, has not said who it is, and I'm hammering them, and I'm in touch with that company, and I'm going to do every damn thing I can to try to get an explanation here, but boy, I sure could use an attorney general to help me. I have a feeling the attorney general at the Department of Justice is not going to be all that interested in investigating, however.
Well, now, Cindy, what about these 7 employees? Have they had any retaliation for coming forward?
So far, not that I know of. I'm told Dan, the HDNet people have told me that they're going to have a follow-up report in a couple of weeks. So we'll see what they were able to dig up. But again, I suspect more people saw it on bradblog.com than saw it on HDNet because not many people have this HDNet.
No, is HDNet, this is a television network, and if it is, what satellite is it on?
It's HDNet, it's HD stands for high def. I'm not sure which satellite service it's on. I know I don't get it. I had to get a copy of it off the website. I do think that HDNet.com carries some of their reports. I believe they carry this one because it was so important. And yet, I tell you, if you look at the stand, your head will fall off. It is just remarkable. But then, beyond that, what's more remarkable is, where's the follow-up? Where's the New York Times? Where's the Washington Post? ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, good luck. Not one of them has picked up on this story.
Well, because our contention is, and I think anybody who's ever really studied it realizes that freedom of the press means if you own the press, you are free to suppress anything you want to. And I really believe they've done that for a long time. I just hope that Dan Rather has the ability now to really tell this story as he'd like to, rather than, of course, having to look over his shoulder and get clearance from the people in charge of CBS.
Yep. Well, he was really swift-boated, if you will, back there in 2004 with that story. A lot of people hit him. I believe it was rather unfair, actually. And it's hurt his credibility because, whether it was legitimate or not, for journalists like him, like myself, really all we have is credibility. And I think, to be frank, I think this recent lawsuit that he's filed has something to do with it, the fact that he came out with this remarkable story, and yet people would either ignore it or they would say, yeah, well, that's Dan Rather, and we know not to trust anything he ever says. And that's the problem that he's up against. So I think it's not a coincidence that he's only just now filed this lawsuit to try to get back some of his good name. Look, challenge his reporting. Challenge my reporting. That's what you're supposed to do here. But when you've got a story where you've got 7 whistleblowers who were in the factory and they said, yeah, that's what happened. We done it. You'd think the corporate media would pick it up and do something with it. Not with the Washington Press Corps we have these days, apparently.
Well, I think that, Chris, that study that Dan Rather got into back, I think it was in 2004 with George Bush's service record, I think he was probably set up on that. I think it was probably absolutely true. that maybe the fellow who fed him the information had actually done that to discredit Dan Rather. Of course, well, you put the story out, then you find out the story isn't true, and then it makes it look like, well, gee, George Bush really was there putting in his service time with the National Guard, and it's the wicked Dan Rather that's trying to discredit our courageous president. I suspect Dan Rather was right. I think that may have very well been set up, but this is a standard technique, be that as it may. Oh, it's so important, ladies and gentlemen, you understand that the medium does not tell us the truth, sometimes inadvertently, sometimes by intent. And a story of this magnitude should be on the front pages of every, of course, major means of publication. And what do we hear about? Britney Spears, the latest issue with Kenneth Federline, O.J. Simpson, all these really earth-shattering stories. And yet something that is important is our right to vote, and fair elections is totally ignored by the controlled media. Well, our guest this evening has been Brad Friedman, and we're going to be back in just a couple of moments here to wrap up this evening's program, and go to bradblog.com. Brad, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, we covered a lot of ground tonight.
So yeah, it was a great program, as always.
I think so. Thank you for having me. And, you know, it's about eternal vigilance, and it's about the citizenry realizing that that document that says government of the people, by the people, and for the people, they need to take that seriously. And they need to reclaim their country, reclaim their elections, take part in their elections, not just showing up to vote, but be a poll worker. Inform yourself about what's going on. Come to bradblog.com. There are other places that will give you information. We link to a lot of them. Inform yourself. Educate yourself. Get to know your election registrar and participate in that process. Raise hell. Write letters to Congress. Call them. Demand election reform, whether it's local, state, federal. Write to your newspapers. Be the media, as I always warn people, because the media is the mainstream media, the Fourth Estate, no longer exists. So it's about we the people, and we are the ones we have been waiting for. We've got to make the difference here, and I think we can. Spread the word, and the information is out there, but it's not going to find you. You're going to have to come find it and then do something with it. It's your country at stake, frankly.
And really, of course, I've seen this time and time again when one person really can make a difference. And all you need is really to be totally dedicated to it. I think Brad is making a tremendous amount of difference. I think his association, his certainly talking to Deborah Bowen here as the Secretary of State, to the county registrars in California, and he does a great deal of talk radio. He's on other stations. He puts out his daily blog. Get the information off the blog. The biggest thing that we have, you know, is the difficulty getting the truth. Well, the information is there on the Internet. I think it is simply not just by chance that at this time in history, we have the opportunity through the miracle of the Internet, even through the miracle of YouTube and the videos that are available on the Internet, to see firsthand what's really going on. So, Brad, keep up the great work. Keep in touch with me. And any time there's a story out there that needs to be told, and certainly we have at least 4 separate audiences we get to on a weekly basis, we'll be glad to put you on.
Thank you, sir. Bless you for all you do. And as always, thanks for having me.
Good night. God bless. Okay, fine. Well, that was certainly Brad Friedman. I hope you enjoyed the program with him, and I hope you'll support him any way that you possibly can. He needs support. We all need support, but he does a great job, and he does it because he believes and cares. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I have to remind you that my ministry is primarily listener-supported. And if you agree with our message and would like to help us, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And what a unique opportunity it is, especially now, to be able to talk to people all across America, all across the world, you know, about what's going on. Let me just share with you a little story. I was talking to a lady, a missionary from from Israel, who's over here. We've had her on our program several times. And I asked her last time we talked off the air what her impression was of what was happening in Israel, and whether she thought, and whether the people over there in Israel felt there was going to be a war with Syria and their neighbors in the near future. And she said yes. In fact, she had a friend who is a missionary who lived in Jerusalem, who was keeping her abreast of everything that was going on, and he seemed to think there was going to be a war. So I said, certainly, if he's well informed, we'd love to get him on. And she said, well, you know, he listens to your program every evening, so, you know, so what a wonderful thing it is to know there are actually people in Jerusalem who are listening to our program and getting the information. So when you're part of the Radio Liberty family, you know, maybe you can afford to help us, maybe you can't. Maybe all you can do is pray for our provision and protection. But even no matter what you do, you're part of the family. If you're helping us, why, of course, you're part and parcel of our outreach, not only to Israel, but throughout the world, through the miracle of shortwave, through the miracle of the Internet. Well, this is the time when I want to remind all of our listeners that we are having an all-day session, all-day seminar on the 28th of October. And if you can come, why, please give us a call and let us know. Now, if you're going to be having to stay overnight and you're going to need hotel rooms, you're going to have to sign up within the next week or so, because they're only going to hold the hotel rooms, at least on the special rate, until the 28th of September. And then, of course, the meetings on the 28th of October. We do need to know how many are coming. We, of course, have to order the lunches. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Dr. Garth Nicholson is going to be here, certainly a world-famous scientist who is actually forced to leave his tenured position at the MB Anderson Clinic because of the attempts on his life. And if you haven't read his book, Project Daylily, that goes into the background of the chronic diseases they've unleashed on the American people and the origin of AIDS and the fact that AIDS is not simply HIV disease. It's also a concomitant mycoplasm, engineered, genetically created mycoplasm in addition to HIV disease. If you'd like to get the Project Daylily, a very important book, we do carry it along with Len Horowitz's wonderful book, Emerging Viruses, and my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. And this will give you an overview of the what's going on with the AIDS epidemic. Although my book, at the time I wrote it, I did not realize, of course, that AIDS has been genetically engineered, that 75% of the homosexuals that took an experimental hepatitis B vaccine in San Francisco, 75% contracted AIDS, and I believe directly from the experimental vaccine, because the same thing happened in Africa, and every place they used that experimental vaccine. And how did that happen? Where did the virus come from? There were 8 different strains of the virus that suddenly, mysteriously appeared in 1980. All throughout the world, 8 separate strains. Do you think they all evolved? Because, of course, they have not evolved. They've stayed exactly the same separate strains ever since, now for 27 long years. No, I believe that they were created. I believe there is an agenda. You'll certainly want to get our DVD on Nundare College Genocide or on Planned Population Reduction. But we do hope you can come to our seminar. You'll have a fascinating time. That's the 28th of October. And then, of course, we ask you to give us a call. Let us know you're coming. 1-800-544-8927. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you again, this is Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour today. I know you're wondering, wait a minute, where...